What is up, everybody? Talk to me, episode 10. Can you believe it? We've hit double digits on the podcast. On this episode, I've got Tommy Vext of the Westfield Massacre. You may know him as the former lead singer of Snot. Also, he was in Divine Heresy with Dino from Fear Factory. What a great band. This is a great episode with Tommy. We talk about him going to Knotfest. We talk about him helping others through helping them get sober. We talk about all kinds of wonderful things. He even breaks the news that maybe Justin Bieber was at Knotfest. So, with that being said, we're going to hear some Westfield Massacre pretty soon. But I do want to say one thing. The Chris Kale Army t-shirt offer is still out there. The contest winner will be announced on episode 11 because I like to turn it up to 11. So what I need you to do, go to your iTunes, rate the podcast, review the podcast, take a screenshot of said rate and review, tweet that to me at TalkToMeTalk, and I will announce the winner on next week's episode. So please, please, please do all that for me, and then we can get you your all-expenses-paid t-shirt sent directly to your house from myself and ChrisKale.com. So, here you go. Here's some Westfield Massacre. See you in a minute.
Will we hold?
Man, that stuff is so good. That's the Westfield Massacre. Go check them out. They're on YouTube. They're on Facebook. They're on all the wonderful social media sites that you can find them on. Go check them out. Let them know that you heard it on Talk To Me. Spread the word about the podcast. Let everybody know about the podcast. Share the podcast. Tweet the podcast. Just let everybody know as you're listening to Talk To Me, however you're listening to me, however I'm coming into you, through your headphones, through your stereo, through your car, on your way to work, while you're at work, when you're supposed to be working, however you listen to me, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. Make sure to hit me up at Talk To Me Talk on the Twitter, facebook.com/talktometalk. You can even email the show at talktometalk@gmail.com. If you're in an unsigned band and want to be played on the podcast, make sure to send me a track at talktometalk@gmail.com. At the end of this episode today, I'm going to play some Look What I Did, kind of going back to episode 1 with Barry Donegan. So make sure to go back, check out episode 1 with Barry Donegan, episode 2, Billy Gray, episode 3, Frank Novinek from the Mighty Hatebreed. Whatever episode you want to check out, it's great to see the numbers rising on all of the episodes. So if you're new to the podcast, please go and check out the old podcast, and let's see what we can do for the future. So right now I'm going to let you hear my conversation with the one and only Tommy Vext. Here you go. All right, Tommy, appreciate you coming on Talk To Me.
Right on, man.
Right on, right on.
Thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. We'll start off with I know that you just went to Knotfest. Tell me, were there any standout bands on Knotfest this year?
It's a strong lineup, you know. It's like 3 days there's a lot of bands in 3 days, you know. So I actually wound up going out. I just got a hotel for the weekend and just wanted to like get out of town and catch up with friends and kind of just see how people were doing, what everyone was up to. But it was good, man. I mean, you know, Slipknot, obviously, over the top show. You know, they always bring it really hard, and it's really cool to see, you know, a band that's kind of that theatrical and doing it at that level. You know what I mean? I think it's inspiring for everyone. I think they broke the rule as far as bands that being, you know, what's considered radio friendly and what's like traditionally heavy metal. You know, to be playing in a venue with 60,000 people there, you know, and to be headlining their own festival is a pretty amazing feat for a band that's been together for 16 years. So that was a great show. I really enjoyed Trivium. I've known those guys since they started, since they had just gotten signed to Roadrunner. And, you know, it's just really awesome. They're like seasoned veterans, and they're just a really great performing band. And, you know, there were so many bands, you know. It was like All That Remains and Mastodon is always amazing. And I actually, for the first time, I got to see Snot perform since I left the band November of 2014. So it was really cool to just kind of go there, see the guys, give them a hug, tell them I love them, and, you know, watch my friend Carl, you know, sing the classic Snot songs. I haven't actually seen Snot perform since Lynn Strait, you know, the original singer, was still alive. So it was really cool, man. It was a really good day.
So you did get to see Snot with Lynn back in the day?
Yeah, I used to go see them every time they came to New York.
You've had one of the more interesting careers, you know, going from Divine Heresy to Snot. You know, when I saw those headlines first pop up, it was a, you know, kind of a head scratcher. How did all that come about with you going into the reunited Snot?
When I was still in Divine Heresy, I remember being at the Wiltern, and I was actually, that's where I met Ivan from Five Finger Death Punch, and we were talking about, we were both huge Snot fans, and we were talking about, there were rumors that Snot was going to do a reunion, and Sonny had just departed from Seven Dust. He had spent, I think, a little over half a decade playing with Seven Dust, and then Clint had returned, and you know, so it's a small town, so people talk, and I remember it being an interesting thing then, and I was like, wow, I really hope they do that. It's one of my favorite bands. And then after I split with Divine Heresy, Mikey gave me a call And I was actually moving. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and it was the day that I was moving with my ex-girlfriend back to L.A. And I was at a gas station driving a U-Haul, and he asked if I wanted to audition, and I tried to play it cool, you know what I mean, and not fanboy out, and I just was like, yeah, man, I'd love to. And I went down, and I auditioned for them at the Roxy, and it was really cool, man. Lynn's sisters and his mom, Marianne, came down, and, you know, the guys kind of knew that from the first jam that I was going to be the replacement, and they let me sweat it out for a couple weeks, and we had a few rehearsals, and then, you know, everyone showed up, and it was really cool, man. It was a lot of love. You know, I got a lot of love for that band and all those guys and everything that Lynn contributed to, you know, kind of, he's had a lot of influence on a lot of bands and a lot of the singers that are, you know, they're hugely famous now. And I think he was an innovator at his craft.
Yeah, so I don't believe
to be able to that to him.
No, I don't believe that they get the credit that they deserve. You know, obviously with his passing so early, you know, they definitely don't get the credit they deserve with all the, you know, that the Get Some album is just a classic album.
Yeah. Even I think that the Straight Up record, the tribute album, like the people who are involved in that is just, you know, it's a testament to the kind of guy that Lynn was and how much people really loved that band and how influential that band was on the mid to late 90s scene in L.A., you know, and they're from Santa Barbara. And you have a guy who's everyone who was on the Straight Up record, you know, it's Ozzy and Max Cavalera and Brandon Boyd from Incubus, you know, Corey Taylor when Slipknot had just got signed,
yeah,
you know, and, you know, Serj Tankian, you know, so it was like, it was all out, you know, and, you know, it's just unfortunate that I feel like the band doesn't, to me, the Snot is like a band that's like refused. They're like a legendary punk metal band.
Absolutely. How was the original or the initial fan reaction to when you joined the band?
I mean, there's always going to be speculation, but I think that my approach I never claimed to be and still don't. Like, I'm not the singer of Snot. I was not the singer of Snot. You know, my job, I felt like, was to honor Lynn Strait, you know, and to honor those songs and to pay respect, you know, to how innovative and creative his vocal stylings were and give people a show that they might not necessarily have gotten to see. I was one of the lucky people who got to see Snot. You know, a lot of people didn't get to see that band, and there's like, you know, and they're continuing to tour in Europe and Australia, and I think they're doing some stuff in Japan for fans who have never gotten to see them play, you know. So I just think that it's, you know, I think what Carl essentially is doing now and what I did is, you know, we basically are just given the opportunity to perform for these people these songs that they love that they might not necessarily have gotten to see because they had such a short run.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a parallel with you joining Snot to something else, and the one thing that kind of kept coming in my brain was like Sublime with Rome, you know, and how.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever had any conversations with him?
No, I've never. I don't know those guys.
Yeah.
Actually, it's like I kind of hang out like I don't know, not intentionally, but more my friends and people that I've toured with before. It's more in the heavier realm of music. Yeah.
Didn't know if paths crossed or what, but you know, just the whole, you know, replacing a singer that has passed away in a band that obviously Sublime was huge. You know, they became huger after Bradley passed away. And what are you doing these days?
Yeah, I mean, I did, you know, over the past couple of years, I mean, I departed from Snot last November because of, I had work issues. Like, it wasn't really an issue. It was a scheduling issue. And I had booked a job and I travel for work and I wasn't able to get out of it. And, you know, I suggested that maybe they get somebody else. And at the same time, Tim Young from Divine Heresy, myself and Bill Hudson, who also plays guitar, he's a guitar player for Trans-Siberian Orchestra. We started writing about, I don't know, I guess it would be like in October of 2014. And, you know, and the Westfield Massacre, the band Westfield Massacre, basically kind of came to fruition. And it was like, for me, it was more back to my roots of like more extreme metal. And, you know, Tim plays in Morbid Angel, and or did play in Morbid Angel. And Bill was like an extremely progressive guitar player. So it was very, it was like a nice challenge for me to like put that old suit on and try to go back into that vocal element. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. And then we wound up going on tour in January, and we did actually sign a deal, and should be wrapped up with our first full length. And I think everything should be done in the next couple of weeks. We're just kind of going over masters and we're doing our record with Joseph McQueen at Echelon Studios. And he's been amazing. He's partners with Josh Gilbert, who was in As I Lay Dying and is currently in Woven War. And so, you know, it's just been a really cool journey, and I'm really, really proud of this record. And I think it's, you know, originally it's the most exciting thing that I've worked on since Tim and Dino and I, you know, originally conceived and created Divine Heresy. So it should be pretty cool, man, and we'll see what it does, and hopefully people like it.
Sounds awesome, man. How did the Divine Heresy project come about?
Divine Heresy, it's so long ago.
In a while.
I don't think about it that often. I guess there's a few people that had a lot to do with it. Corey Taylor is actually one of them, and so was Robert Camp. And Robert Camp, who is the owner of Century Media Records, and actually Mike Gitter, who used to work at Roadrunner and now works at Century Media. And Mike is one of the guys who discovered Killswitch Engage and bands like El Nino. And Mike had his eye on me for a while. And Dino was looking for a singer. And he had tried out a few guys in L.A. And basically, I had met Dino at an Asesino show in New York. And then Mike and Robert suggested that he try me out. And basically, the long and short of it is Dino and I sent me tracks. I recorded out of a studio in Queens that was owned by the guys in Canderia, and actually Kenny, the drummer at Canderia, engineered my vocals. And then I sent them back to Dino, and he was like, all right, cool, like, I want you to come to L.A., you know, and be in my band, but first I have to do this Roadrunner United thing. And it was right when Roadrunner was celebrating their 25th anniversary. So I wasn't really in the band yet, and I went to the rehearsals to like hang out with some of the guys in Shadows Fall, and just to see Dino and like see Machine Head. And I was a bouncer at the venue where the concert was being held, so I had access to the building, and I just kind of rolled in during the daytime when they were rehearsing. And you know, Rob Flynn asked me if I wanted to sing. And I got to sing with, you know, Joey Jordanson was playing drums, and Dino was playing guitar, and Adam Deuce and Rob Flynn, and, you know, Andreas Kisser from Sepultura, and Roy Mayorga, and, like, so all these bands, like, all these dudes. And I got to sing, like, the whole set, and they were just, like, having a fun time, and they're like, oh, this kid knows all the songs, you know, and I was, like, 22 years old. And Corey Taylor came in and heard me singing Surfacing, and he invited me to come play the show. So actually on the Roadrunner United DVD, like halfway through the Slipknot song Sick during the jam, I come out on stage and performed with them. And that was kind of it. You know, I think after that, Dino saw that I was confident in front of a crowd, and he was like, you have to be in my band. And so basically I moved to LA right after, and met Tim, and we got in the room and we started making music, and, you know, it turned into the Bleed the Fifth record.
Wow, that's actually a pretty amazing story. You get the stamp of approval from Corey Taylor, and, you know, Rob Flynn telling you to sing. That's amazing. Got to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I've been very lucky, man. I've been very lucky. I don't know how much. Well, I guess it's luck, and it's also showing up and being, you know, at the right place in the right time, and, you know, always being prepared. You know, I do vocal warm-ups still. I do vocal warm-ups every other day. You know, even when I'm not touring. And, you know, I've been going to Melissa Cross for about 13 years now. And, you know, I just, that's kind of, it just kind of, kind of happened the way it happened, and it's been a rad ride, you know. It's been fun.
It's fun. So what were some of those early Divine Heresy tours like?
Well, my first, you know, touring experience was with Divine Heresy. I was in a hardcore band coming up, and I had opened up for Candiria and Burned by the Sun on an East Coast tour, but we had never done anything that was more than like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so it was cool. It's like, you know, going out there and getting in front of crowds, and, you know, we were first on a four on a bill with, who was it? It was Static X, you know, when Wayne was still with us, and Shadows Fall and 3 Inches of Blood. And basically we would come out every day on stage and like tear a hole in the floor.
Yeah.
And it was fun, man. You know, it was fun. And it was really cool. I have a lot of nice positive memories of the beginning and before things started to get tumultuous. And, you know, there were a lot of strong personalities in the band. And I think that, you know, it's obviously very publicized with the Divine Heresy split, but, you know, we had a good time when we did, and we were really good at what we did, you know, and we were all about a live show. You know, that's what we were doing. We were basically kind of coming out on stage and muscling it down, and the audience liked it. It was rad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of great, you know, a lot of great publicity and stuff around the, you know, the first Divine Heresy record. I remember when that came out, you know, being really excited about it. So it's definitely good stuff. Dino's obviously an underrated guitar hero of most. So, you know, strong personalities aside, you know, you can't deny the talent.
Oh yeah. Nobody can. I mean, I would never, like, I would never take anything away from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think, you know, Dino in his own right is an innovative guitar player. You know, and I think that he's got a really good ear for song structure, and I think he makes memorable music that people like and that resonate with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's kind of, those are his attributes, and, you know, we just try to, as I've gotten older, I have learned to focus more on the positive attributes of others and not so much their shortcomings, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, and that goes into the, kind of doing some research for this and looking onto your Facebook, things like that. It looks like you're helping out a lot, helping people get sober. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Well, I'm in recovery.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wound up getting sober right after, it was probably about a year and a half after I was, playing in Snot. And, you know, I'd gone through some stuff, you know, really picked up a really bad drinking and cocaine problem after actually I lost a child, and I was engaged, and my ex-fiance I should say, lost a pregnancy at around eight and a half months. She got really, really sick, and you know, I didn't know how to deal with my feelings, and I was on the road, and you know, Sonny's been recovered from drugs and alcohol for about 13 years now, but he and his ex-wife Colleen, at the time I was really doing bad, and they let me move in with them, and I lived with them, and they helped me get my life together, and I kind of just been on a different you know, kind of different path ever since. And you know, it's been really cool, and I'm very fortunate that I am in a position where I get to help people, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I worked for many years in the helping kids through you know, like abused, mentally, physically, sexually abused kids for many years, and just dealing with those stories just day in and day out, that takes a toll on someone, you know, and just trying to help out, do the best you can. I definitely couldn't imagine, you know, losing a child, being a parent myself. Just it's, you know, definitely a tough it would be definitely a tough thing to swallow, especially that late in pregnancy. So I'm, you know, my condolences. I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. You know, it's kind of the things that happen in life that, we wind up learning how to use them to help other people,
yeah.
You know, and I think that you know, there's been a, there's, you know, I do a lot of public speaking and stuff at rehabilitation centers and schools, and, you know, people always tell me, oh, you should write a book, and I'm not ready, you know, the way that I look at it is, like, you know, I'm not invested so much in, like, in my story or, like, what my life was. It doesn't define me. It becomes a tool that I use to reach other people who have gone through similar or, you know, harder times.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's no, you can't really put a price on hope. You know, there's no currency for that. And honestly, like, you know, I think that somebody, I forgot who I was talking to about this backstage yesterday. And, you know, someone was like, wow, it's really, you know, how do you not get burnt out doing what you do? And I said, you know, as a musician and a frontman, like, from the time I was young, all I wanted to do was matter. You know, we want to affect other people. Like, we want to take our music and our art, and we want to go on stage, and we want to touch people. And, like, you know, it's one of two things. You're either entertaining them and getting them out of themselves, or you're getting vulnerable lyrically and you're talking about, you know, your own personal feelings so that they can relate and that you kind of all heal together in this, you know, big movement of music. And for me, I get the same, you know, emotional gratification. Just work with people one-on-one and it becomes more personal. And it's just as deeply gratifying. So I'm really, really happy with where my life is, you know, and what I'm able to do.
Yeah, that's a great quote. All I've ever wanted to do was matter. That's a great, you know, that would definitely be a great quote.
I know, man.
Cool. I'd like to give a shout out right now to my friend Josh for helping this out. Josh Hoxley. How do you know him just out of the blue? Like, when he texted me saying
we know each other. We know each other from just like the New York scene. He is he's friends with my friend Derek and Aria.
Okay.
And Derek is a buddy of mine who we met. Oh man, he was a younger kid. He's like 25 now, and he did a show at Santos Party House, and I introduced him to Melissa Cross. And then we all just kind of we just became friends, and we stayed friends. So, but me and Derek go way back, and I know, you know, it's like a lot of people like Aria used to live in New York, and a lot of people from New York, like myself and Doc Coyle, who's my best friend, like, everyone's migrating to LA.
Yeah.
Cause, it's probably too cold. And there's not really, the scene is kind of struggling in New York because it's hard to be an artist and live in New York City because the increasing cost of living is so severe. As an artist, you know, when you're working on a project financially, you have to suffer a lot of the times, you know, unless you can figure out a way to be financially stable. And it's hard. You know, New York is a very expensive place to live. So I feel like, you know, people are making their move over here. So.
Yeah, I went up there years ago to, I was auditioning for a band up there, and I stayed with Josh in his apartment, and it was, you know, the size of a one-car garage, and they were paying, like, it was like him and like six, him and six roommates, and it was like $3,000 a month. I was just like, Jesus Christ.
Yep.
But yeah, Josh, I think Josh Hoxley is how he's not on the cover of every magazine right now, and it still blows my mind. He's a great, you know, great frontman, great singer.
Yeah, man. Well, it takes time, you know.
No.
And, the scene is I don't know, it's a very interesting climate out there as far as, you know, and you know, as an artist, like, I just signed to an independent record deal, you know, with a label that I'm like, I can't even mention until they do an official press release.
Yeah.
And, you know, the climate it's bad out there. It's bad and it's different. And people don't know what to invest in. They don't know what the next thing is. Everyone's afraid of losing their job, you know, and there's this like old mentality with the record labels, you know, that they're like dinosaurs. It's like I almost like look at the power struggle as like if you were at Night at the Museum, you know that movie with Ben Stiller?
Yeah.
And like the dinosaurs started fighting with each other over whatever, you know, like over whatever you could say, like whatever money is coming in from the artists that they have, and it's just like bones cracking together and turning into dust. And honestly, like it's something is going to have to change eventually, you know, because people love live music.
Yeah.
And people love rock music. And Knotfest is a perfect example. You know, there are 60,000 people in the middle of fucking San Bernardino who are out there for the entire weekend spending their money to enjoy and have an experience with rock music, but yet radio doesn't play it, you know, MTV doesn't play it, and this is not something new, you know.
Right.
And you know, now with the internet, people get their music the way that they get their music. And it's just funny to me. This is funny.
Yeah,
I'm not making an exact point here.
No, I just think it's sad, you know, growing up and, you know, you grow up with a guitar in your hand, you grow up with a bass in your hand, you know, drums, whatever, however you're growing up, and you dream of that day of, like, signing the record deal and, you know, getting the big advance and going on tour and all that fun stuff. And, you know, it's just not there anymore. It's just such a crazy world that the kids are growing up in these days. You know, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that the imagination and relying on a record label is complete ignorance, you know? I mean, if I wanted to, like, I work 60 hours a week, like, and I make good money, and I basically bankrolled my band.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make a record that nobody was going to control or tell me what it was supposed to sound like. And so, you know, I got a couple guys on board, and we fucking made art. We made something that we wanted to make, and like a label wanted to pick it up, and I'm like, that's cool, you know. But I think that that's kind of the way to do it now, you know. I think that a lot of artists, there's an old idea of trying to appease a label or a genre or a scene, and honestly, it kills the music. There's so many bands that have copy Killswitch Engage and copy Periphery, and you know, there's like the Lamb of God ripoff bands, and you know, there's like all there, you know, and that's what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like one band comes out and then 1,000 other come right behind it, and it's an oversaturation. And you know, I miss the throwback days, you know, and maybe this is me being older, but you know, when Korn came out, didn't sound like anybody else. Pantera didn't sound like anybody else. Metallica didn't sound like anybody else. Rage Against the Machine, Tool, System of a Down, you know, these bands didn't sound like anyone else.
Right.
You know, even Fear Factory and Machine Head and Slayer, like all these bands sound like them. And now I don't even know. I listen to a lot of this stuff, and maybe that makes me old, but it's just like, there's like this whole thing of like, as soon as somebody does something, before it even gets out there, it's already been copied 200,000 times.
I agree. You know? Do you think that a lot of that too is this, all the, you know, the drum samples and the guitar plugins, you know, everyone's using the same samples, yeah, and you know,
I think that technology has created an availability that's a double-edged sword. I think if you're a fucking seriously amazing guitar player, you know, like, and you can't find a drummer in your city, then you can use the internet to find somebody and try to figure out a way to link up. But until then, you're going to have to use programming. You know what I mean? So in that case, yeah, it's great. But, you know, that's also with respect to the integrity of trying to do something different, you know? And, I'm always like, if you're going to rip off from somebody, rip off from yourself, you know?
Very cool.
But you gotta invent that first.
Yeah, I think this is what scares me with a lot of these bands. And you hear the drums, and you're like, you can't tell if they're real because either they're samples or they're a drum machine. And then it just scares me. I'm like, can the drummer actually play that? You know, where are you finding the drummer that can play that? You know, and it would almost worry me that they go ahead. That's why you hire what?
Tim Young.
Oh, right. Yeah, get all those dudes.
He can do that shit.
Yeah. God.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know, when it could,
you know, I look at that stuff and I'm like, and it's, you know, I'm only as confident as the guys I get to play with. And like, I look back at my, you know, if I look at all the people I've jammed with, man, I fucking made music with some great musicians, and nobody kind of realized, like, I'm not really, like, a professional singer. You know what I mean? I'm just a fucking cheerleader.
Yeah.
I'm like, check out this band. Yeah, man, you know? So I've never even really considered myself an artist, you know? I just feel like I'm just a big kid when it comes down to it. I get to do this thing, and, you know, we get to portray characters on stage that help us express, like, our inner demons. And, you know, it's like, but it's a lot of the technicians, like, and, you know, you watch Bill Hudson play guitar, or you watch, you know, I was in a band with Angel Vivaldi. You watch Angel play guitar, and you're just like, fuck, dude, like, how do they make you? You know, you see Tim sit down on the drums, or, you know, and I get to jam, like, Kenny from Candiria, we do, like, this cover band jam in L.A. just for fun with Doc Hoyle and a couple other rotating members from different bands, and, you know, you're just like, how the fuck do they make you? Like, how do they make you, you know? And that's the thing. Like, I just get to have a good time making noise with these dudes. And I think that's the thing that I don't ever want to let go of. I learned how to play music in a garage.
Yeah.
In my friend Mike's mom's garage with a bunch of 14-year-old kids who we thought we were going to be the next Pantera, you know, and we went to concerts and we started playing shows with fake IDs in Manhattan. You know what I mean? And out in neighborhoods and places we shouldn't have been at that age. And we didn't care,
yeah.
You know, because all we wanted to do was jam. And so, you know, now we're all adults and we're actually good at what we do. And so it's just fucking cool to get in a room and jam. Like, that's always going to be a part of who I am and what I love and what I do. And I think all musicians need to get in a room and jam. Whether you're, you know, married with kids and, like, it's, you know, it's not for the intention of having a career. Music makers need to make music. And that's just how it is. And this is the way we're made.
Definitely. It's kind of going back to that with, you know, the 14-year-olds in the garage. What were some of your early influences in music? What was your gateway to metal?
Oh, Pantera. I mean, I heard... So my cousin John... He liked Danzig and Megadeth and Metallica.
Yeah.
So I heard Mother for the first time when I was really little, and I was like, "Wow, that's cool! Like that dude's gnarly," you know?
Yeah.
And then I didn't really like. I liked Soundgarden and like my dad got me into the Beatles when I was little, and so I liked Soundgarden and Nirvana and, like, you know, even Green Day, and I was like, "Oh, this is cool." And then I heard, I can't remember where, I got the Crow soundtrack. I went to see the Crow, and, you know, everybody loved that movie. And then I heard Pantera's The Badge, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I think I got Vulgar Display of Power on cassette. and that was it. It was done.
Yeah, Pantera is definitely like my all-time favorite band. Like, if someone ever goes, what's your favorite band? I'm like, Pantera. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like,
they were the powerhouse. You know, there will never be anything. I mean, I don't know when there's ever going to be anything like that ever again. You know.
Yeah.
But they were that band. You know, and it's cool, man. Every band that I know has been influenced by that band, and you know, I mean, we used to cover their songs. We used to play Metallica. And then I got a little older, and then Korn came out, and Deftones, and it's just cool, man. Cause, you know, like, I grew up listening to bands, and, like, I know these people now, and they're super rad, and they're super cool, and it's really humbling. You know, it's kind of this thing where, like, the bands who are really famous, the members, for the most part, in my experience, they're very humble and they're grounded and, you know, it's not a big deal. They're there to, like, do the thing, and they're very professional and they are super respectful. And then there's a lot of bands who are trying to come up and then they have a propensity to treat people like assholes. And, you know, my experience is that doesn't work. You know what I mean? And, you know, humility gets you a long way. The real rock stars of, like, any kind of festival touring is the fucking production. because they are putting up with so much shit. It's the people who are coming in, like, rigging up the stages, and the security who are staying there all weekend, overnight, sleeping 2 hours a night. You know, the catering people. I went on tour and did catering. I've done all kinds of jobs. I did bodyguarding for a pop star. I did catering on a festival tour. Like, I've had all kinds of jobs. And so you don't really, like, until you kind of put yourself in those shoes as a performer, like, you don't really, you can't appreciate how much goes into just, you know, the time that you get to go up on stage. Like, that's the cool part about touring, is the fucking 45 minutes or the half hour or the hour you get to be on that stage. But it's like, so many people have to do so much work in order for you to just be able to go do that. You know, and you don't realize that until you don't have it.
Yeah, definitely. When I was younger, I built stages at a production company in out of Nashville. We did a lot of like corporate gigs, and you just be like, it would be pretty crazy, because it'd be like, that was like Christina Aguilera was massive, but she would do these, she would do those corporate gigs where she would come in and no one knows she's in town, and she was making, you know, crazy money to perform for like Coca-Cola or something. And, you know, it was pretty crazy. Tim McGraw, Faith Hill, all that good country stuff too. But yeah, it's seeing that side of music too, you know, pretty crazy. Yeah. And then I did that. And then I've talked about this on a previous podcast, but I took off on Ozfest 99 or 2000, the year Pantera was on it. I went with some friends to St. Louis, and then I saw like they had like the carnival ride people, and like you would throw a balloon, you get like a CD sampler type thing, and they had a sign that said help wanted, and I talked to him about it, and I was like, well, fuck, I'm 19 years old. I went back to my friends like, I'm leaving with Ozfest. I did like 4 dates of Ozfest.
That's
awesome. and then hustled my way back to Tennessee. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. And then after that, I joined Primer 55 after that, and then toured with them for a long time and all that fun stuff too. So
that's good awesome. Stuff. I remember that band.
Yeah, I was like, you know, like the third bass player, and you know, so it's. It's always like the
I know Bobby from when he was in Soulfly.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Bobby. Yeah, actually it's funny when you're kinda getting ready for the podcast and thinking of like tumultuous band members. Like I just remember like now Bobby and I are like, you know, I love Bobby to death, but back then we always just butted heads and just, you know, it was his thing and I was just kinda coming along for it, but we grew to love each other.
But, every band's got to have a leader, I guess. And, you know, it's a shitty job.
Yeah.
It's like you don't really understand it until you become it. And, you know, it's just...
I guess, you know, coming from, like, previous bands that I was in, even though they weren't, you know, anything huge, I was kind of like the alpha. And then he was the alpha. So it was just like, you know, kind of butting heads that way. But...
I know what that's like.
right. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
How can people find you on social media and all that fun stuff if they want to drop you a line or keep up with what you're doing?
I am I'm on Instagram at Tommy Vexed, or you can go to facebook.com/Westfield Massacre for updates and music. And, yeah, we're Westfield Massacre is on YouTube. We're on Facebook. We are on Twitter at Westfield Massacre. And yeah, that's kind of it. Find me. Talk to me. Say what's up.
Cool.
It's funny. I checked my social media. Like, it's actually crazy because I was walking around Knotfest by the second stage, and like, there were people with Westfield Massacre T-shirts, and like, just like, oh, dude, like, what's going on? Like, are you guys playing? Like, I heard that you were the secret band. I'm like, who the fuck said that? I'm like, I wish I was. Maybe next year.
Right.
They're calling a couple favors, but so yeah.
Yeah, just the lineup of that Knotfest. I was checking it out because I was trying to see, you know, I was picking through the lineup. I mean, there was a ton of bands on that too. How many stages were running on that thing? Like 3 or 4?
Well, they ran 3 stages on the fairgrounds, but stage 2 and 3 was one stage and it was rotating.
Okay.
So while one, like for example, All That Remains was performing, and behind them, the stagehands were building, were setting up Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah.
And so when All That Remains was done, the stage rotated around, and Cannibal Corpse was there, and they start playing.
That's awesome.
And it's just the way, yeah. So those rotating stages they're pretty awesome because, I mean, you can, it cuts down on the load up time.
Yeah, I was watching that. Yeah, I was definitely watching the. Looking at the set, you know, set times, it was like, you know, they end at 4:40, the next band starts at 4:40. Like, I just envisioned, like, you know, the first band playing and then like rotating, like on their last song, and then the first, you know, like a,
yeah,
some sort of carousel of metal.
Those guys are all the production teams and the stagehands. Those guys are such pros. They have it locked down to a science, and they just kind of, it's like, it's seamless, you know.
Oh, that was definitely must have been amazing. Yeah, that's another thing too, like with the festivals. We'll get off onto this, and then I'll let you run. But just like, you know, you're talking about 60,000 people being at Knotfest in California with no radio play, you know, limited radio play.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you look at those festivals in Europe with 100,000, 80,000, 60,000 people, and, you know, no media attention, no coverage on any kind of, no music channels are playing the videos. And that's what I've always liked about metal, is it's kind of like its own little secret. But it's just amazing to know that people are still going to shows like that, and then, you know, it's still so underground, but yet it's so huge.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, you know, it's just, the people want what they want, and, you know, metal is a lifetime thing, and it's not going to be stopped. It's just going to keep going and growing. You know, it's like, it was like, who is fucking... I was backstage and like Slipknot was going on in there, and I saw Matt from M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold, and like, you know, like Ghostface Killah was there, and Mobb Deep played, and like you have like the there's just like all these different band people, and then I heard over the radio that Justin Bieber was there. It's like, this is a fucking shit show. This is a full on shit show, you know.
That'd have been great had Justin Bieber came out.
I don't think he would, because I think that I think either like Mick would set him on fire or the crowd would just kill him.
Just drag him into the middle of the pit.
I know, Mick Thompson's a big guy, bro.
Yes, he is.
So, all right, cool, man. Well, listen, I'm gonna get out of here, and I'm gonna get over to the gym right now. I gotta hit Equinox, so I will talk to you soon. And thanks so much for having me on, bud.
There you have it, everybody, Mr. Tommy Vex of the Westfield Massacre. Make sure to go check them out on YouTube and however you can find them. Make sure to give them a like on Facebook, and make sure to tell them that you heard about them on Talk to Me. Once again, this episode is brought to you by ChrisKale.com with the ChrisKale.com Kale Army t-shirt giveaway. Make sure to go and rate and review this podcast. Tweet me that screenshot of the podcast rating and review, and I will announce the winner on next week's episode, and it's looking like it's going to be a pretty cool guest. Pretty excited about next week if everything comes through as it looks like it will. So you better know your enemies before you make them your friends. And that's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. Like I said earlier, going to play some Look What I Did. But first, let's talk a little Halloween. I hope everyone had a great and safe Halloween. This past Saturday was October 31st. Hopefully you went out with all your friends and your family and had a wonderful time. We took the baby out trick-or-treating, and everybody had a wonderful time. And I definitely overdosed on some chocolate this weekend. Without taking up any more of your time, here is some Look What I Did. I don't know, it's got that bad word in it, like he said on the podcast. So yeah, go back, check out episode 1 with Barry Donegan, where we talk about why this song gets so many views on YouTube, and it's most likely because it has the word pussy in it. And here you go, here is said song. Yeah.
And there you have it, everybody. That was Look What I Did. Make sure and go check them out on Facebook. Make sure to give them a like. Make sure to let them know that you heard the song on Talk To Me. Once again, I just want to give a big shout-out to everyone who's gotten to me to episode 10. Thank you to everyone who has downloaded an episode, checked out all the episodes on the way to this one, made the podcast go global. Just like Billy Gray, we've gone global. I'm going to leave you with a little treat, a little 12-volt negative earth action. This is from the pre-Where Did All the Sunshine Go demo. This is a nice cover of a Cypress Hill song called Cock the Hammer. So until next Tuesday, everybody, this is Cock the Hammer by 12 Volt Negative Earth.
Action! Cock the hammer! Cock the hammer! It's like